Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
I am your host, Tanya Communication Doctor, and the reason I do this show is because I want to provide a space for people to speak their authentic truth, coming from a heart space rather than a head space. Allow people to get into their space of consciousness, their space of confidence, and their space of connection. This, I think, promotes positive mental health, and this is why I do what I do. Hello, this is Real Stories, and I am your host, Tanya the Communication Doctor. And today on my show, I have Dorina Owindi. And I just want to say, we just started having a dance to Soma Yame Muti, I probably said that wrong, Soma Mayuti, Black Diamond. We had a lovely, wicked dance, and it was just to kind of open up this whole energy and to kind of flow and to get going. And I love that Dorina loves dance, and she's quite similar to me. She writes like I do. She loves dance. She loves the art. So it's just so exciting for me to have a creative on the show. Absolutely beautiful. So just welcome, Dorina. Welcome, 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 welcome. I just want to start by asking you and phone you straight in. Can you just tell me your audience, what your ancestry is and where you're from and where you're living now? Because I think that's just so fascinating. So share that with me, please.
Hey, everyone. I am actually born in Kenya. My ancestry is Kenyan Bantu with a lineage. My dad told me that we have a lineage from Egypt. So I would just say that. But anyway, I'm Bantu, and I am bicultural as well, because I was raised in Finnish culture as well, because my dad came to Finland in the 60s. So that affected his formative years, because he left Kenya before Kenya received independence, and he met my mom, and my mom's lived in Kenya for over 40 years. So at home, we spoke English, which is quite common for people who do not have a similar language or background or culture. So I grew up speaking English, Finnish. Finnish is my second language, and also I speak Kiswahili as well. So I grew up in Kenya. I am Kenyan, but my nationality comes last, because I feel like at the end of the day, I just happened to grow up in a piece of land that was named Kenya. No, but at the end of the day, yes, I am African.
Beautiful. And you know what you said earlier, you said we're coming from the motherland, and I love yes. that. It's so important. And it's so interesting, because I only speak English. I dabble with a little bit of French, a little bit of German, a little bit of Spanish. When I go to a country, I think, okay, I need to know how to say this tastes lovely, you're beautiful, and thank you. So I'll always learn that sort of language. So I'm always fascinated when someone can speak a language fluently, because I think it's so important. And I love the fact that you've got that crossover, and you said, you know, you're bicultural, and that crossover between the European and also the African. And I feel what comes with that is your energy as well, and your knowledge and your wisdom, your spiritual wisdom of what you do. Now, you are a co-creator and you are also a healer. Can you talk a little bit about that? What does that mean to my audience? So you said, what does that mean? Why do you call yourself a co-creator and a healer? What do you do?
Okay. I actually call myself a healing facilitator. So I'll touch on the healing first. So my journey to healing or this work was, started years back, because I just lost my dad and I needed like some space, and I started doing healing writing, which I had no idea was part of journal therapy. So that's how I got into journal therapy. And when I realized that the poetry I was writing was actually helping people unlock words and feelings that they had, but they could not find the words for it, that kind of brought me to this journey of being a healer. So a healing facilitator, and I call myself a healing facilitator because I don't necessarily do the healing. I work with the spiritual realms, like with God the Creator, with the archangels, and sometimes with people's ancestors to assist people in healing. Because at the end of the day, you know, we carry trauma. Trauma transfers into DNA, right? So our ancestors know the secrets to what, where the trauma comes from. And if you sometimes ask them, why do I feel this way? Then they'll tell you there's some great, great uncle from God knows where who actually was greedy or did something. And this is the reason why you certainly feel anxious. And then sometimes even the money mindset, like some people have a poverty mindset, it comes from that. Mm. Because maybe in your family, you're told if you work hard, you're going to be like, you work hard, you get money. But at the end of the day, when we look at working hard, I don't think there's a there are continents. Like, for example, in Asia, if you look at people in Asia, if you look at people in Africa, they're the most hardworking people you'll ever find.
Most and definitely.
Then everyone would be a millionaire if that was the formula, you know? It's all about working smart. And the reason why I call myself a co-creator is because whatever I write, whenever I speak, when I was blogging and doing my lifestyle blogging, or when I had, whenever I wrote, and it was something I would always ask the divine creator, I'd be like, what do people need to know now? Or what? So then I would channel sometimes, and sometimes these experiences that I had were for me to be able to tell this story, because even if it's my story, other people may have gone through the same thing or something similar, so they're able to connect with it. So that's why I call myself a co-creator. Lovely. And when we're creatives, we're tapping into things from the ethers. That is why you'll have incidences where someone has an idea and then someone takes it and they're like, but that was my idea. And then you see someone making millions out of it, but then you didn't take it. So the truth is that whenever we have ideas, they're out there, but it's for us to tap into it and accept it and bring it into the physical form. Because if we don't do that, someone else will. And I guess that would be my fear, is of not, when I think of doing something, I'm like, I think that's what made me stop procrastinating, because I didn't want someone to be the first one to do something. So if it's something that I want to say or want to do, I'm like, I'm going to do it, because then that way, it's existed, I've done it, so I don't feel the need to kick myself or be angry with myself for not doing what I was supposed to be doing, because there's a reason it came to me. It came to me because I was ready. But sometimes, also talking a bit deeper, is sometimes there are ideas that come to you, but maybe opportunities come to you, but you may say no, because maybe inner you is not ready to receive the blessings or the wealth, because you're not able to keep it. So when things don't work out for you, don't kick yourself. You were not ready, and opportunities always come. We live in a world of abundance and not scarcity.
You know what, that's beautiful. And also what you're talking about there, I say, is divine timing. You know, everything comes in divine timing. Yes. But I want to go back, because as you were speaking about being a healer, there was something you said which I thought was quite profound. And it's also something I discover when I do a lot of transgenerational work. And also I do a bit of shadow work as well. And when you talked about mindset, but you went deeper, because there's a lot of people will talk about changing the mindset, difference like Carol Dweck, difference between a growth mindset and a fixed mindset. But when you look deeper and you look from a spiritual perspective, that the mindset is just surface stuff, because you can't just change your mindset, as you said. It goes deeper in terms of ancestral and the whole belief system that you said, like when you go back and you can discover that your grandparents or your great-grandparents had the same belief system. And this belief system has gone on for generations. And sometimes when I do work with people, I often can see with women as well, there'll be a long line of independent women, you know, a long line of independent women that have gone through poverty and don't feel they are worthy. And this worthiness is ancestral, and it goes deeper and deeper and deeper. So it is about clearing some of that ancestral line. So you can then move forward and you can be free of that. Now, talk a little bit more about that, because I know, for example, in hypnotherapy, because with hypnotherapy, we access the subconscious. Mm. And when you access the subconscious, you're able to eliminate some of those limiting beliefs. But it's not just going to happen in one. I always say to people, it's not going to happen in one session because there's so much there that one is carrying. And then the deeper you go, you start with having a look at, okay, that's your limiting belief. But then, as you said earlier, it comes from deeper. Mm. It comes from your great parents or your great, great parents. And then sometimes even family, like certain families can carry an energy. So this idea of wealth is bigger than just the word and just working hard. Some people think we work really hard or if we invest our money, and then some people read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that's how we're going to achieve wealth. But actually it goes deeper and deeper and deeper than that. So can you share a little bit more of that kind of work with me? Because I want my audience to understand, you know, I use a hypnotherapy to do that. That's one of my tools to help people to eliminate some of that. What's one of your tools that help people to recognize? Because sometimes they don't even recognize where that's coming from.
Mm. I'll start with, first of all, when we have these belief systems, sometimes, you know, when we're born free.
Yes.
We're born with a clean slate. But then it happens that society and the things that were that our parents heard, or that kind of, because we're born in different eras, of course. So there are different things that are popular at the time. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
So then it takes 7 years for people to be programmed. Because remember when you're a kid, if you wanted something and you wanted it now, and you would just ask for it, because before you came down here, you were living in a realm where you could just imagine things and things would happen. And then now when you're here, you have to learn to be patient, because sometimes things just don't happen like that. And for example, when you were playing, you'd be like, imagine this would happen. And you know, if you think about children, when they want something, they're relentless. Mm. That thing is on their mind and they'll get it in the end because they keep asking for it. And then that's one thing that we as adults have forgotten as children, because kids feel no shame to ask for whatever they want. Whether it's super expensive, they don't care. They will just ask. But then as you were programmed that you're not allowed to want expensive things, maybe not allowed to want certain things. And some people go to the extreme of maybe they never had certain things growing up, so they want to give their children everything at the expense of themselves and at expense of their culture. And the expense of their own values.
Yes, yes, I see that
a lot. So now why I'm mentioning this is because I'm just trying to give people like a picture of how it starts.
Yeah,
so totally. Now when you grow up, you realize that there's certain, like you silence yourself because you realize that there's a certain way that you must behave in order to receive. So now imagine, like, now that as a teenager, then there's that peer pressure that comes where you're supposed to be doing this and that. And if you're not doing this, then you can't be the popular person. Like, you know, there's all these things. So in that is where our social wealth starts.
Yes.
What are you able to do so that we will accept you? Mm. Which in the end ends up having unhappy adults who... Yeah. In their mind, you even tell yourself, but this is how things are. Things will never change because you never saw anything different. But think about those children who are probably the misfits or the black sheep. They're the happiest people ever, you know?
that was me. I think that was me as a kid. I definitely didn't fit in.
yeah. They didn't fit in. Yeah. But then at the end of the day, when they end up doing the things that they want, if you think about the people in their circles, will be like, yeah, actually, I'm not surprised that they're doing that because they were always like this, because they stayed true to themselves.
Yeah.
But now imagine all those people who took all that programming, all those ideas, all those beliefs, on top of that, what they're the beliefs of their parents and their grandparents and their great grandparents. So you can imagine that's a heavy load to carry.
Of course, of course.
So when I do my work, how I identify it is usually some of these beliefs are in you, but you're not even sure that they're there. Mm. It's only when I ask my client, I'm like, I get this sense, or I'm seeing this belief that I'm not beautiful. Is that true? And they'll start crying. because that is their truth. That's how they feel. And maybe when we go back, they never saw their mother tell themselves that they were beautiful. Their mother had body issues, and the mother would be like, if I lose like a two kilos here and there, like I am gonna be beautiful. So then your mother maybe passed on their insecurities onto you. So then you end up having these body issues and you're dieting like crazy because you saw your mother do that.
They call that unconscious learning, really.
Yeah, unconscious learning. Yes, and exactly.
Because you're absorbing, and I suppose a lot of people don't realize, you're absorbing everything in your energy. So as you're growing up as a child, it's interesting, even look what your children actually start saying the same things. Yeah. I mean, I have some of the same saying as my parents.
Yes.
And you'll pick that up, and I see my kids say some of the same things.
Exactly.
And then they're not just saying the same things, they're picking up our belief systems.
Exactly.
And it's been ingrained in our kind of subconscious, which is what I call our data. So everything's in our data. And the only way we can change is access. But even before you get to that point, Dorina, what's interesting is, it's not just as simple as getting the question out. It's almost like listening to a person's language.
Yeah.
Because I know with my clients, it's interesting that you picked up on that, because sometimes people don't realize in their language what they're saying. And even myself. So when I listen back to the podcast, sometimes I've interviewed someone, I really listen to my language, and sometimes I listen to that person's language. Because sometimes when you take back and you sit back and you're able to reflect, and you can listen and look at your own self with a critical eye, that's where the learning starts.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with when you're working with a client. If you're looking at them with that critical eye, you have to switch it on. Like for example, I had a client and she was saying, but I'm just really angry. I'm really angry about this. I'm really angry. And I said to her, then when she started saying the word angry, I thought, where does that word anger come from? You know, who are you angry with? And then she revealed that she was angry with her husband. So all of this is like, you have to kind of, it's almost like playing a bit of detective work, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like being a detective spiritualist almost, to kind of find out, okay, look at these words, where has that come from?
Yes.
And then they have to recognize it in themselves first. And then it's such a process, because like I said, it can't happen in one session. True. Sometimes it takes a lot just to observe. Observe what your own belief systems are. And then I know for myself, you have to digest it before you even go into transgenerational trauma.
Yeah,
you have to digest your own stuff, because you can't always see what is going on for you.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you are a healer, I always say, which is lovely why I've had you on the show, because I know you're of the same ilk. But if there's a lot of people that are doing this healing work and they have a lot to say, and they have a lot to give, but they don't reflect with their own self. And I feel that's part of the journey. We have to have a look at ourselves and be honest and open about our insecurities. I mean, I often say quite openly, I've suffered from anxiety all my life. And that is something that I'm constantly working with, you know? And it doesn't mean that I'm not a good healer. It means that I'm a good healer because I understand it. So when I do this psychotherapy work, I understand from a deep level. Because I understand where it's coming from. So sometimes if you're honest with yourself about what's going on for you, then that opens a door so you can really access those points in your clients to help other people and to help move forward. So that's why I wanted to answer the question, because I just feel some people listening, but they may not always understand what that means unless they've had that experience. And I feel one thing I would ask my audience is, if this is new to you, to maybe just record yourself in a conversation on a Zoom or something, and then listen. Just say, I'm just recording it for my own, you know, for my own, reflection.
Yes.
And when you're working with a client, if you're a coach, listen back to your language, your tone, and what you're giving. And we're not perfect, but it's just a self-reflection point. I feel that's a really good thing to do. Well, that's it. But moving on from that, in terms of, because you did touch up on quite a few things there, and I love the whole idea of the healing and what you do, but I also did want to bring you on the show because you have got that Kenyan ancestry, and I wanted to talk to you about the whole energy from the motherland and from Kenya, because we had a beautiful conversation and we were talking about the Maasai warriors, and I love the Maasai warriors in terms of their strength, in terms of what they can do, So talk to me a little bit about your understanding from that perspective, from the African perspective, from being an African woman, and how differently you may have been brought up, or how differently you see things spiritually to the Western spiritual woman.
Okay. One thing that I must say is that it doesn't matter where someone comes from in the continent, everybody has an initiation stage. Where you have to go where you're born, and there's a ceremony, and then from that, then there's another ceremony of initiation. Like, for example, the boys, if it's not being circumcised, or if it's not having to be in the forest for, I don't remember if it was a period of time, you know? So, and then after that, there's that transition from boys to men.
Yes.
And even with women, it's like before they got married, there was some certain conversations and stuff. Well, I feel like in the West, where people just go run through with life. You're born, maybe you have your christening. Like, there are also these other rituals as well, but they're not as deep. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes,
I do. Like, because for example, in Finland, family means the people that you eat out of the same fridge.
Beautiful.
So if it's like, if you're not in, like, it doesn't matter if you're blood related, just long as you're not in the same home, like once you move out, you're not really considered family at the same point. Because even like for me with my relatives, it's like, for example, in the Kenyan side, it's like if someone came to visit you, you don't know when they're leaving. They could stay for a year, weeks, whatever.
That's really hard, isn't it? Sometimes we've experienced that before.
Yeah. So it's like yeah. So it's like here it's like maximum 2 nights, and if you're staying a week, it's like maybe like, yeah, you can stay a week, but I mean, like, there's that, you don't want to overstay your welcome, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like you go knowing that you're a guest, you know. Mm. You don't go knowing that you're like your family, but you're still a guest.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
While in the other perspective, it's like we're like whatever you have is ours, you know. Yes. Like, there's that community or that communal mindset. So when it comes to that with the Maasai warriors and with all these other ethnic groups, they all have to go to an initiation to be where they are. And I feel like they get to know themselves because they have to experience, they're given different tests. And I think that's why when it comes to, because I feel like people from the continent are very intuitive. Like, we didn't need market research to notice that people need like certain things. Like, you just you notice that, okay, people like this thing. Maybe what if I do this and that? And then that's how people do this trial and error thing. But then here, everything has to be so serious. You know, you need to get permits for everything. Like, you're not allowed to fail.
Yeah.
You know, in a way, like, you're not allowed to fail. Where there, if it's like, if you didn't do something right, it's like, okay, you learn, like, you go back to the drawing board, and people are like, well, at least you tried, you know. So I feel like that's the disconnect, is that people there, it's like you don't have the fear of losing friends. I don't know how to explain it. Like, you don't have that fear. But here it's like your social credit is more important than your heart. So
yeah.
You may, and who you're with, but I feel like that is also balancing out, because, you know, of course there's classism, and like I feel like colonialism, that aspect of different religions brought about people kind of moving away from their culture and their rituals and all these things and stuff. But the thing about the Maasai and those nomadic, I'm just going to call them nomadic communities.
Okay.
Because they, they're very in touch, because they chose to uphold their own values regardless of what people would say, because that was the way of life. And I feel like because they're the voice of authority, if you go to their areas where they live in, there's not much development, because they protect their land. I can give you a story.
Before you give you a story, I just want to come back to what you said before you give us a story, because I love what you said there with regards to the Maasai warriors. And for me, it's clear the difference, because within the Western world, we have systems, we have structures, and everything's formed. Mm. And even this whole idea, like you're saying, from a marketing perspective, or sometimes when you, or even as a kid, when you're in the playground, it's all about being with that group. And then as you get older from marketing, it's like, this, what's your niche? Mm. We all have to be together, you know? And in some ways we create a lot of segregation and separation because of these forms and these structure, but it works for the Western world. But everything is, in some ways I see it, is so clinical, very clinical. Whereas in the African world, or if you, when I say African, because it has still got those systems in Africa in some ways, but I mean the indigenous people, because we're talking about the Maasai warriors. Mm-hmm. What was beautiful is what you're saying is, you know, with the marketing, you know, you look at your eyes, look, you look at stuff, you can see stuff mentally, you're able to take everything in and absorb. And in terms of lessons, it's okay to make a mistake. And I feel like we need to go back to that from in the Western world, because it does, all these systems, it works for some things, but in terms of making connections and accessing with people from the heart space, which we talk a lot about in spirituality, it comes from the indigenous people. All of this spirituality, it comes from the indigenous. It comes from connecting on that deep space. But the problem is, I think the difference between the indigenous people and the Western is everything is the head. And I feel like with the African, it's the heart and the head. Yeah, so you're working together. But sometimes it's almost like, I would, can honestly say, because I've experienced it very much, even in Western kind of spiritual groups, where they're so in their, they might be so in their heads, and they're talking about connection of heart, but it's only for them. Do you see what I mean? Or only for their small group, rather than for the community, rather than if somebody addresses something and they don't like it, they don't want to address it. So there's so much work to do there in terms of those real connections. And I feel as African people that everything is head, because you, we also always, I always think Africans are so good at maths. You're always adding that up, putting that together, and I see working everything out for business wise, but it's all in the head. And sometimes you have to take it from the head with the Western man to explain it. You have to write it all down and explain it. And I suppose this is something which has been taken from us, you know, over the years, in terms of, because we are very quick thinkers, we are very much the people who develop in a very different way, but it is different, it's just a different way of working. But I feel there's a lot of intelligence there and a lot of connection to what I call source. When I talk about God, it's like connection to the source. I say that just because it covers everything in terms of our belief systems and different people's belief systems, but it's about connecting with the source. And I feel when you have these indigenous practices and these spiritual practices, it helps you to connect to source. That's why I just wanted to share with you there. Yeah. I feel that's so important.
Because my story was actually related to the Maasai. So I'll just give an example of how community works, where, for example, in Maasai Mara, it's a reserve. So basically it means that whatever money that is spent on that reserve goes to the community. So by you going there, you're helping. And most of the people who work in the hotels are Maasais. And you can go visit a Maasai village. But the interesting story is they're allowed to graze their cattle on the reserve, whether they're lions or whatever. And maybe one person has a cow lost and someone will call them like, hey, do you know anyone who lost a cow? Because like, it's just roaming in the, you know, just the reserve. And they'll be like, oh yeah. So then they'll find a way to get that cow back. Yeah. And sometimes they can be lions there and they'll just be walking and grazing the cattle and the lions aren't even interesting. But that's what I mean, interested. Mm. And that's what I mean. That is energy.
Yes.
That
yes.
is energy. It is, because very much if, so. That's what I'm saying about the indigenous people is like, they're able to coexist with these animals. But then of course now there's been, because people have been, what is, I saw this thing where people say that this is maybe an animal crossing. But then the truth is we're actually building our houses or our communities on their land, because they've been using that land for years. So now they're just using the route that they've always been using. Like there was once we were in a Nakuru National Park, and then there was like, it was morning, we'd gone for an early game drive. We passed a bunch of buffaloes. And I noticed that we were in the middle, and then like I was looking at the buffaloes, and then I was looking at them, and then I got this inkling that I'm like, you're on our route, like move the car. And I and I was with my mom, so I told my, because I was doing the, because I was still, I had the camera, so I was taking the picture. So I'm like, hey, could you please move the car a bit forward, because I feel like we're blocking their way. And guess what? Once we moved, the leader looked at me as a thank you, and he continued. Like, they all crossed the road, so we were blocking their road. So we also have to have respect. And that's why even now when people go to the national parks and stuff, like I, because I've been traveling, like I started going to national parks when I was like three, like I've been going for years. Been to Amboseli, been to Masai Mara, been to Nakuru National Park, many different reserves around the country.
Yeah.
However, now because it's a new thing, people are taking their radios or like their Bluetooth speakers. And
the radiation.
Not only the radiation, it's about the vibration. Because these animals, they communicate with vibration.
Yeah, of course.
When you take your Bluetooth speaker and putting music, you may think that you're alone. But that music, that vibration is going, is like, is continuing in the ethers. Because, for example, even elephants, they communicate psychically, telepathically. You know, so you're actually interfering with their connection.
Yes.
So I find it like, that's why even when you go to the parks, they say, be quiet, you know, stay on your lane, you know, no loud music, because they know this. But then because people are so oblivious and they're like, oh, let's, you know, have what, stay away from the park, go to, because in Kenya, we have an orphanage. So it's not necessarily a zoo. It's basically, it's like an orphanage. It's, animals that have been abandoned or their parents were killed or they were not able to survive, so they were taken in, but then as they grow older, they'll be released back to the wild, so they're not going to stay there forever.
Just to kind of help
it's just kind of it is so it's not like a zoo. We don't have zoos, and for me zoos are the most, I think I hate zoos.
Yeah, I know. I can totally get that, because it's quite, because you're, when the zoos, it's almost like you're in prison. You're putting an animal in prison, basically. That's what you're doing. And that's what's so lovely about, you know, in Africa or certain places where, you know, you have the safari and you allow people to run wild. And it is right. You should respect that space. And the reason I said radiation is what I meant, like the radiation, the vibration, it's all the same thing. It all affects the communication, as you said, or that kind of development. And just how we communicate, because sometimes even if we have, even I feel even in my home, because if there's so much devices in the home, it can affect even when you're doing spiritual work, which is why we have certain crystals that you can place in the home, you know, to help with that radiation that goes and that vibration and so forth and so forth. But when you go to the park, or you go to those special, you know, you go to those national parks, what's lovely is they preserve everything, or they're trying to preserve. So it's about respecting nature. And I feel there should be a bit of a talk, or maybe there should be a little bit more there where you say, okay, and you need to respect that this is what's going to happen. So can you maybe turn your phones off or something like that? So we can walk through that. So it is, all of these little things I feel are just so key in terms of reconnecting, because I want to bring it on to climate change, because that is something also that I want to talk about, because a lot of people are talking about the climate change, but I feel, interestingly enough, and we're talking about technology, and we're talking, there's some good things and there's some bad things. But with regards to the way the world is going now, you know, there's so much trees that have been cut down. There's so much of nature, especially in the Amazon, that has been destroyed. There's so much, you know, there's so much there that has been destroyed to the point that the population of human beings is growing and the population of animals is dying and the populations of trees. And I go back to the Lion King, you know, everything works together as one. That's how the circle of life goes. And we're losing a sense of that. Really, we're losing a sense of that in this world, because there is no kind of acknowledgement about the nature, no acknowledgement and no love, not enough love for nature, not enough love for the animals, because this is beginning to be very much a human-led world, and it shouldn't, because it's, the humans don't lead the world. We're all connected. So what's your take on that from a kind of a spiritual perspective with regards to climate change?
Okay. So I would just like to go, like, let's go back. like really, because at the end of the day, like, I'm just going to start with before I go back, let me just start with the modern day world. I noticed last year during the lockdowns, when I was going on YouTube, there were these advertisements of certain games. And in these games, you would see that someone was maybe thrown off from some island to some remote place, and there were lots of trees, and they were hungry, and then you'd see they'd cut trees, and then they'd start building whatever, or bringing modernity. And which,
what was the game? You said these.
I don't remember what game it was, but it was like a game that you play online.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then you see someone has been thrown, like there was maybe someone is on a deserted island and they're hungry. So then they start cutting trees to clear the land, to build houses. And then they kind of buy stuff and then upgrade, and then it becomes a city. And then after that, you know, all these trees disappear.
Oh, so a bit like what they do in Minecraft sometimes, isn't it, really? I suppose all these
But then those games are programming us to not respect nature.
Exactly. And again, that's again a lot of that subconsciousness as well. There's access in us without we actually realizing.
Because if we go back and we see how nature used to work back in the day, like people used to respect nature, if you go back to ancient cultures, people, when they woke up, they would worship the sun and they would say goodbye to the sun and sunset. If you look at all the ancient cultures, it was the same thing.
Yeah.
So now it's like even the soil, like if people were going to kill an animal, they'd ask the animal for permission, you know, to nourish their bodies and souls, and to nourish their families and stuff. So in nomadic cultures, some people, like for example the Maasai, they respect their cows because they believe that the cows were given to them by God. And they're the keepers, or they're the keeper of all. So for whenever they see a cow, they feel they're entitled because that is the lineage they're from. So on to climate change. Because at the end of the day, there's one thing that we keep forgetting is the earth doesn't need us. If earth decides it doesn't want us, it'll destroy us.
Okay.
Explain
a little bit deeper in terms of that.
Because if you think about it, when we were in Pangaea, before we got separated, remember when the continents, we're all one. Remember, we're all one. Yeah. And then we got separated, and then we were separated by water, which was the great floods, which if you like read the Bible, there's that Noah's
Ark.
So then there was also the great fire as well that happened. So basically what I'm trying to say is that what we need to do is to go back to respect nature, because at the end of the day, earth is also a person. Like it has stages of what it's going to develop, and it's going according to our vibration. You understand what I'm saying? So if we don't respect it, it's going to make us stand up and respect it.
Well, do you know what? You've just made such a key point there in terms of, you know, people would ask me about predictions for this year. And I said, there's going to be a lot of freedom, a lot of people wanting their freedom, and a lot of disaster, you know, major disaster. That's what I was seeing. You know, there's going to be major disasters in the world this year. Mm. And, but I just, what I saw, but I couldn't explain it. I was just picking that up in terms of when people ask me, Tanya, what do you predict for this year? And you know what? It's really interesting, because that connection to disasters that just happen, you're right, that is a universe doing its work. Or you could say, I suppose that's source, that's God doing his work. And it's like, you are not respecting the earth. Therefore, this is what's happened. And we have, like, you know, you have major earthquakes. You have some real big things that will go on.
Yeah.
And people will die. And the population will die down. And that is, like you say, it's almost like, partly you could say from a spiritual perspective, that is like, okay, well, we're going to bring this on now, because at the end of the day, there's so much power within the universe. And I feel sometimes we don't really acknowledge that power. And the disasters is almost like saying, here, well, here you go. You know, you didn't listen, here you go. And different people, innocent people obviously die and get, you know, but in some ways, if you go deeper, that is somebody, that is a choice that has been made before you've come onto this planet. Yeah. So you've already decided that's your contract. Yeah. I know it sounds quite harsh, but we all have a contract before we come onto this planet, and we all have a purpose. And some of the things that we experience are horrible, but it's all part of our journey and our development to get to that next lifetime, or evolve in the next lifetime. That's my, but then again, that's a belief system my belief system.
And the other thing is because so many trees have been cut prematurely, so that the trees also, they hold secrets. They hold, like, so they've not been allowed to develop because some trees, indigenous trees, are not able to perform their function until they reach a certain age. So if you cut them before they're able to reach that that age, so then there's so many things on this planet that we're missing because that tree was cut prematurely, or that those areas were cleared prematurely, which brings me to climate change, is that people have forgotten how everything works, how air works, how, because for example, like now, with the climate change, they always talk about the carbon footprint, but we need carbon to survive. How, like, for example, when you're breathing in oxygen, we breathe out carbon dioxide.
Of course.
And during the day, you know, if you know how photosynthesis, chlorophyll, all those colors, how the plant produces its own food, it's giving us oxygen.
Yes.
But at night, it's the opposite, you know? It goes, so like there's a way that it functions, but then we've somehow forgotten basic science, because we need that carbon, because without carbon, how do we get rain?
Yeah, exactly. It's just how the system is. It's science, basically, on some level. You know, it's science. Yeah. Is how it works, really.
But the problem is that we've let people, because that's the problem that I've noticed, is that we let experts, because no one's asking the indigenous people how to counter climate change, because they have the secrets. For example, in Australia, with all those fires that they had, if they had consulted the indigenous people, that this is because they know what happens to their land, they understand, they have the secrets. But if you're going to use your methods, ignore other people's methods, because there's even a TED talk of someone who said you need to ask the local people for help, because there's a once, I don't remember which country it was, but it was somewhere in Africa where they started planting a place, and then people were looking at them like, don't plant it there. They were like, you know, what do you need? You know, they were just thinking this land is, you know, they can do whatever they want. And they were so proud of themselves of how they're able to grow food. But the hippos ate all the food. And then they asked, and they told the people like, oh yeah, like, yeah, but we knew about that. Then they're like, yeah, but why didn't you tell us? We tried to tell you, but you never asked any of us for our opinion. So that's the thing, because indigenous people in general, we observe things, and we're not going to tell you anything unless you ask us, because we're not busybodies.
But it's just watching, it's almost like watching, it's that whole colonialist mindset where people kind of come in and just destroy the world, just destroy everything. And then without, like I said, with all these forms and structures, without actually thinking things through.
Exactly.
And then you have, like you say, you employ all these scientists to say, okay, and even like with now, with this whole kind of COVID, employ all these people to say, yeah, we're going to create something, but actually not thinking about the backlash, not thinking about how that's going to affect people in a deeper level. So there's all kinds of different layers to this. And that's why it's lovely. I'd love to speak more to some of the indigenous people. You know, I'd love to be able to have those conversations as well, because, you know, I'm a Black woman, but also I'm a very Western woman because of the way that I've been brought up, and because of, you know, what I've been exposed to growing up. And some of my mindset is probably very Western. But the more I talk to people, the more that I read, the more that I learn, it's really interesting to see the spiritual power. And I feel this is my ancestral, you know, if I'm really to look back in terms of originally, I'm probably from West Africa, you know, if I'm really to go back into that and to see that. And I'm sure there's so much there in terms of just in my ancestral line, which I could probably access. But what's really interesting is we've come away from that, and the way that the world is going, we're not connecting with what's really going on. We're not really connecting on a deeper level. And I think that's just so key, what you just said there, because we have to look a little bit deeper to understand why it's not right to plant this. And it's not just architectural, because we'll just look for sometimes. It's almost like I said, now we're going back to what I said with the Western thinking, is all the head.
Yeah.
And with the African thinking, it's the heart and the head.
Yeah.
And that goes deep. That goes really deep.
And sometimes people are like, yeah, let's plant trees, but what trees? Because for example, maybe those trees you're planting do not even give nutritional value to the soil. It maybe robs the soil of those trees. So people, that's what I'm saying, indigenous people know all these secrets, which plants do this and which plants are good for the soil. For example, was it the American Indians, for example, they, when they were planting the maize, they would have beans and they would also have pumpkin, because then, you know, the beans would give nitrogen to the soil and then the pumpkin somehow. So then it never had weeds. So then it was like, that was their way of counteracting, you know, all that stuff. So there's a way that they, it married together, but then now, you know, we've been told, and think about it. Was it years back? I mean, not years, not too far off. DPP was something that people were actually ingesting, and you wonder why people have eczema now, you know.
Exactly.
Because it was like, so I mean, like, pesticides were okay to take, people, it was okay to smoke when you're pregnant, it was okay. So like, that's why I keep telling people, don't trust everything that you see or every campaign that's been pushed to you. Dig deeper, find out. And then with the climate change, if you think about it, the people who are the voices of climate change and who are experts are hardly indigenous people. And those people of the keepers of conservation are hardly indigenous people.
And that's all we've got to look at on a deep.
And then case in point, was it last year where this Ugandan environmental activist was photoshopped out of a picture? And
I didn't know that. But I shouldn't even be shocked, because that's what's been happening in history for years, you know. Black people have always been eliminated, from history.
Because it was a picture of her with Greta, and who I find a little bit problematic as well. She photoshopped out, and then she was asking, like, she asked the paper, why was I photoshopped out? And people are like, oh, you know, all these excuses that they give.
Yeah.
So in the end, people are like, she also had the right to be there. And that means that, and people are saying, why is her voice insignificant? Because at the end of the day,
what's her name, Darina? This Ugandan?
I don't remember right now.
Yeah, it was good to look it up, really, to see what's happening.
But I don't remember her name exactly, because I don't know if her name was Stacy or Stella. I think it was Stella. I'm not sure, but I think, yeah.
Okay.
But yeah.
Well, I can have a look afterwards with regards to the scenario.
So she was photoshopped out of it. So it's like, and also with all these... with all these forums where they spend billions and people fly in with their private jets and talking about far off places that they've probably just been in for a few hours at a time and not really experienced it. I'm like, how come they get to decide what happens in other places? They don't have to live there. They don't have to live with the repercussions. So it's like, why? This is the question, is who are we listening to? And why do these people become the voice of authority, and why are their voices only approved? And that's why when it comes to climate change, you can be your own scientist. Start planting your own stuff at home and experiment. See what happens when you do something. See what happens, because that's what we did when we were kids. We were taught about, you know, transpiration, like the way plants sweat.
Oh God,
like,
yeah, all of that. And my kids are always experimenting with stuff.
Exactly. So
you got to just let it be, and they can see.
Exactly. And then the thing is, like, why do we take people's why do we take people's voices as truth? Even what we're saying right now, do your own research. We're not a voice of authority.
Exactly.
We're just speaking our opinions.
Yeah.
It's just a discussion, and we don't even have to agree on what's the right path or way. We're just having an open discussion, because this, what I find is very dangerous right now, is everybody having the same opinion, which to me is quite dangerous, because it just means we're not evolving as people if we all have the same opinions as everyone.
Well, that's what I always say. I say this in my podcast quite a bit. I've said this, if anybody disagrees with me, please get in contact, because I'd love to hear your perspective. Because that's how we learn. Sometimes when I have a real debate with somebody and I feel strongly about something, that's a lot of time I go away and I reflect and I think, okay, let's have a look at this person's opinion, you know, and then I make my mind up, because sometimes it's like when someone triggers us, that's where all our learning can happen as well. And it's always, that's when we can really reflect again, in terms of what I said earlier, in terms of looking back at yourself and listening to your words. listening to your behavior,
yeah,
and being able to access that point and say, okay, and be self-critical, accessing that point, so I could be self-critical of myself, you know, and see what's going on, because that's a learning. It's a constant learning. I think if we all did this, that's how we grow. And at the day, you just told me about something I didn't know about with regards to that Ugandan. And I'm going to look it up as soon as I finish today. I'm going to be looking it up because I'm disgusted by that, but I'm not surprised because that has been happening for years, you know. A lot of people are surprised about the report and stuff that's going on, but I'm not gonna talk about it today because I'm gonna have another podcast which is dedicated to that, so I'm not gonna go there. I'm gonna concentrate on climate change and spirituality, but just that whole idea of that connection or that lack of respect for the Indigenous people and that lack of respect for understanding. And it's been happening for years in terms of understanding the African people and understanding what they do bring and how they could help with this current situation if people just reached out and spoke to them. And I'm even Dave, I mean, I do love David Attenborough. It's one thing he does do that he does consult or he does speak to the Indigenous people from that perspective, which is a good thing, but there needs to be more of that, more of that kind of connection with the Western world and the Indigenous people throughout the world to help us to kind of save, so-called save the world. But I love what you brought up about disasters. I think that's one of my takeaways from the show, what you brought up about with regards to, you know, if people don't, you know, if the world doesn't want this to happen, the universe will deal with it in its own way, you know, with a disaster or something. I love that because that is so true and it's been happening for years. We're looking at how we can save the world now, but in some ways for years the world has been changing. And even think about, I've got this beautiful book on, it's called, I've got it, looking at like the ancient Egyptian Buddha. It's a brilliant book, and it talks about Buddha being, you know, Buddha was originally African, and they basically got all the proof there within the book, which is amazing. And because we're looking at it and saying this is where India was, this is where Buddha was born, but where that was, if you look at archaeologically, was actually Africa, because the world is constantly moving.
Yeah,
and places are and slowly, you know, when the world is crumbling and coming apart, new countries have been formed over the years, over centuries. And that's how, with regards to the West, what they've labeled all of these countries, because we didn't have all these labels before, you know. So when you look at that on a deeper level, that's how you understand historically, it's not actually India, that was Africa, you know, where that was. So it's interesting when you look at things really deeply from an archaeological perspective and you can understand what has gone on in the world. It's just so fascinating. But I'm going to have to bring it to a close just because of time, because I can talk to you forever. I'm going to have you back on the show, I think, definitely to discuss more, because there is so much to discuss with regards to the current situation now. And it's interesting to hear a different perspective as well. I think I've had, I've talked about climate change, but everybody has a different perspective. And it's lovely to have that spiritual, but here the phone goes again. It's good to have that spiritual connection as well. So I want to say, Dorina, is there anything that inspiring you want to say to my audience before I bring this to a close?
What I'd like to tell the audience is, experience life now. Don't think too much about the future, because what you're doing today builds up to what the future will be. So if you're in a state of fear, then you're allowing fear to be the future.
Yeah.
So find peace within not only yourself, but learn to know who you are as a person, because when you know who you are, no one can tell you who you're supposed to be. And be gentle with yourself. Be gentle with yourself. We're all going through something, but be gentle with yourself, because you're not the only one.
That's beautiful. And what comes to my mind is, there's a quote that says, when you eliminate fear, it brings courage.
Yes.
And that's that, really, you know, we used to eliminate, get rid of the fear and then the courage. And of course, we all have fear about different things. If someone says, I have no fear, you know, that's normally a load of rubbish. There's going to be fear of the aspect of fear in some aspect of somebody's life.
Exactly. And fear is good.
Yeah.
It's a motivator as well. It's one of our shadow. If we didn't have fear, I feel like we would not, what would we be doing? Like, what would we need to get through if we didn't have fear?
Yeah, there's always fear, there's always a bump in the road, but it's just how we deal with it really to get to that point of courage. Yeah. And I think that's so important. So
I've learned to make fear my friend.
Brilliant. Exactly. No, totally. And embrace that experience as well. Yeah. So we can move forward. Yeah. Thank you very much. Exactly. Lovely. Thank you so much, Dorina. So I'm just going to say from Tanya the Communication Doctor and from Dorina Owindi, adios. It was just so lovely to speak with Dorina, especially when she was coming from the perspective of connection with the Creator and the Earth and wanting to do the best from a place of intuition and connection rather than a place of ego and strategy. And I think that's one of the best things that we can take away from this conversation today is, let's come out of this place of ego and building and destroying the earth, and let's come from a place of what do we need to keep feeding the earth. And it's as simple as watering the plants, and it's as simple as listening to the animals and the plants and the trees and everything around us and just connecting on that deep level. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you got what I got from the show, which is some great wisdom and great connection.
Thank you for listening. If you would like to learn more, please visit our website at communicationdoctor.co.uk. And to listen to more real stories, don't forget to subscribe.